From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, looking back at one of the biggest stories in Texas for 2014, Ebola. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're going to look back at the Ebola story of 2014 because there is so much to be learned from this news event. There was a palpable fear of the virus that gripped the nation, and there were calls to seal the borders and end flights to Africa. Here's Texas Senator Ted Cruz speaking with Sean Hannity on Fox.
And this is a serious public health threat. The approach of the Obama administration so far has been, like its approach to so many other things, fundamentally unserious. And the time has come to ban commercial air travel from countries that have an active Ebola outbreak. The arguments the administration is giving against it don't make any sense. And the top priority, Sean, should be to protect the health and safety of American citizens. We need to do more. We're not doing enough. And if the president won't act, then Congress should reconvene and Congress should act to protect the American people.
It became a political debate between hysteria and science-based decision-making, and the news media frequently ill-served the public with round-the-clock, over-the-top coverage. Now, looking back with the luxury of hindsight, we can see that there was no U.S. Ebola outbreak, and that may be due to the administration's policies or just dumb luck. Today, there is no Ebola in the United States, but in West Africa, the outbreak continues, especially in Sierra Leone. The number of known cases globally has now exceeded 20,000, the World Health Organization announced this week. And the death toll from the outbreak, which has been mostly confined to West Africa, has risen to 7,905, according to the World Health Organization. And there was one fatality in Texas. In late September, Thomas Eric Duncan became the first person to be diagnosed with Ebola in the United States. Duncan, who had recently arrived from Liberia in West Africa, showed up at a Dallas hospital with a high fever, but was given extra strength Tylenol and sent home. Duncan returned 4 days later in critical condition. On October the 8th, Duncan died of Ebola. This week, he would have celebrated his 43rd birthday. KERA's reporter Duwali Zaikautau spoke with Duncan's family about their memories of him.
On the day I meet Josephus Weeks, he's wearing jeans and a blue hoodie with the words combatives instructor. The U.S. Army veteran of Iraq stands 5'9 and is visibly somber.
This is the house, the place. Eric and I are supposed to stay here.
We're in a two-story, 1,200-square-foot townhouse with two bedrooms and a back porch that opens up to a small pond.
Unfortunately, we talked about this, and he was excited to come here. He couldn't wait to make it here. But it didn't happen, so I'll show you around.
Weeks is actually the nephew of Thomas Eric Duncan. His mother was a teenager when she gave birth in Liberia, so Weeks was raised by his grandmother, who was then pregnant with Duncan.
We've been together since birth. Everybody thought we were twin brothers, and then we went to my mother, and we lived there till we were adults.
Weeks became the big brother. He says because Duncan was the sensitive, nonviolent one.
I was the one who was in fights, always, you know, picking up fights for him. When somebody messed with him, he would always come running back and get his big brother. And that would be me.
They parted 22 years ago when the civil war in Liberia displaced tens of thousands of families. They stayed in constant touch over the years. And when Duncan was hospitalized in Dallas, Weeks was the family spokesman. Sitting in a bedroom that he calls Eric's room, he says the two were supposed to grow old together.
Hey, man, Eric is my real dog, man. We played soccer together. We played basketball together. The girls liked him. He had pretty eyes. He had good hair. I didn't, you know. He's a very kind person, very clean, very neat.
I'm just going to sit out here, watch the lakes, discuss our strategy to make our business, to support our kids.
Like Duncan, Weeks is a single dad. Duncan leaves behind two boys in the U.S. and two girls in West Africa. Each has a different mom. Weeks won't say how many kids he has, only that he's now the father to all of them, including Duncan's four.
The foundation is him. So just like I took care of him, it's the same way I want to take care of this foundation.
He's referring to a memorial fund that Texas Health Resources has established as part of a confidential settlement with Duncan's family. Week says he wants to help raise money to build a hospital in Liberia for Ebola patients.
I have to get this foundation going so at least Eric can live forever in my mind. So even after I'm dead and gone, his kids can still look at a facility or structure with his name on it and still feel like he's still here. Their father didn't die in vain.
So why is he now working with the hospital when he was so critical after Duncan's death?
The doctors should have done their job and should have done it the right way. And that's what I was trying to push them to do.
They accepted the fact that they made mistakes. So they have an opportunity to make it right. And if they want to work with me as the family to go ahead and do something to help make this whole situation better, of course I will work with them. Give them a second chance to prove that they are actually competent people, they are actually good people, and they are honorable people. How else can you prove that?
Week says he and his family held a private ceremony for his brother in honor of what would have been his 43rd birthday. Duahli Saikautau, KERA News.
Ebola was once considered an obscure but deadly virus confined to Africa and didn't pose much of a threat to the rest of the world, but that has since changed with the outbreak earlier this year. Research into finding new ways to treat and beat Ebola is not new, as I found out in October when I visited the Texas Biomedical Research Institute in San Antonio, where work on Ebola has been ongoing for 10 years, and that research frequently turns to primates for testing. It's snack time for the macaques at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. A worker is tossing quartered apples to the hundreds of excited monkeys as he walks down the line of outdoor cages. Don Taylor is in charge of taking care of the animals.
See that little guy right there?
Yeah, what's he's doing? Challenging us a little bit. He's bobbing his head down. They're just trying to show you how big they are.
Aside from humans, macaques are the most widely distributed primates on the planet. These highly social and adaptable animals can be found in the wild from Gibraltar to Japan. And they share another trait with humans, big chunks of our genome. That's what makes them useful for scientists like Gene Patterson, who is looking for ways to stop the deadly Ebola virus.
They have a very immune system very similar to humans, and they show disease very similar to humans.
Patterson is the chair of the Department of Virology and Immunology at Texas Biomed. She and other scientists here are searching for ways to better detect Ebola, find more successful treatment drugs, and above all, develop a vaccine. And now that Ebola is killing thousands, their work has taken on a new sense of intensity.
We are working at capacity right now. We have been for a number of years and will be for a number of years. So we can't really do much more than we're already doing, but it certainly has created some urgency in what we're doing.
But working to develop medical answers to the Ebola virus is limited because it's so extremely dangerous. There are only 6 facilities in North America allowed to handle Ebola and other killer microbes. These level 4 biosafety labs are required to be highly secure, be airtight, have fail-safe plans in place, and be closely monitored. There's one at Texas Biomed, and scientist Anthony Griffiths gives me a tour.
Okay, so when we go into the CSL4, we kind of congregate in this area first. To go into the lab, underneath your suit, you wear scrubs, and when you come out of the lab, those scrubs are autoclaved, which is a full decontamination before they're washed.
I could only get as far as the lab's front door. It's thick stainless steel with a reinforced triangle-shaped window, and there's a large yellow sticker that declares caution. This heavy-duty portal is the entry to an airlock where there's a shower of disinfectant. It's on the other side of the airlock where the researchers like Juan Zapata work while encased in a bright yellow full-body hazmat suit.
So these guys are heading into the lab. What are you going to be doing in there when you get in there?
Doing observations and treatments.
So these guys are supporting a vaccine effort and our drug efforts as well.
True. Why do you ever get nervous in there with Ebola?
No. No. Honestly, I don't. No. I'm very comfortable in there. with what I do.
Juan is stepping into and zipping up his custom-made rubber suit. Then comes the pressure air hose that snaps into place. Now he's ready to work. He'll spend between 2 and 4 hours doing his job as a veterinarian research technician. That's because it's not just vials of Ebola in the Level 4 biolab. Macaques are also in there who have been infected with Ebola, and they need to be cared for.
The animal would, in a vaccination, would be vaccinated before they went into the lab. They would be monitored closely to maintain their comfort as best as we can. Then at some point, the vaccine has either succeeded or failed, and we will analyze elements of the animal, and that happens at necropsy, which is autopsy in a human.
There are animal rights groups that question the use of monkeys and other animals for this type of research. Kathleen Conley is the Vice President of Animal Research Issues for the Humane Society of the United States.
Well, we have concerns with the use of animals in research, but particularly when we uncover that there are minimal animal welfare laws being broken, as we found at Texas Biomedical Research Institute.
The Humane Society recently conducted an undercover investigation at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute and identified problems with the handling of primates, including the deaths of a baboon and two macaques who were strangled by getting tangled by door cables in their cages.
Well, we are working towards the day when no animals are used in harmful research, and until that day comes, we feel that laws should be followed, and also that ending primate research really should be an urgent priority.
Conley says she is opposed to using animals for medical research on both ideological and practical grounds. She says other methods could be used to develop medical breakthroughs, like a cure for Ebola. But Robert Lanford, a scientist at Texas Biomed and the director of the Southwest National Primate Research Center, says without using the macaques, there would be no way to find a vaccine for Ebola.
It is acutely aware now that we have a virus spreading across Africa and threatening to leave that continent and go to other continents, that the public appreciates the work that we're doing in non-human primates.
Lanford says inspections from the U.S. Department of Agriculture have found areas where the animal care needed to be improved, but that's the normal process, and those issues have been addressed.
And the USDA said, this shouldn't occur. Redesign your cages. We redesigned every cage on campus. We use the USDA's recommendations as a mechanism to improve our program.
There is no doubt that Ebola will now have a permanent presence in West Africa and will be a constant threat to every part of the globe. It's going to cost billions of dollars to fight Ebola, and another cost is the lives of the macaques. That raises the ethical question that each of us should address in our own way, as the urgent search continues for the elusive Ebola vaccine. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. We're looking back at the Ebola story, one of the top news stories of 2014, and looking for lessons learned. Ebola continues to spread in West Africa, and it's not unreasonable to expect another Ebola victim like Liberian Thomas Eric Duncan to be discovered in the United States sometime. After Duncan arrived at the Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, two of his nurses who treated him also became infected, setting off a nationwide effort to contain the disease and fears of a larger outbreak. The head of the hospital later apologized for the problems with Duncan's care and admitted that mistakes were made with protecting the nurses from Ebola. The organization National Nurses United said healthcare workers were on the front line of combating Ebola and their safety needed to be a priority. They called for access to full protective gear, proper training on that gear, and the implementation of a mandatory buddy system for nurses. I spoke with Martha Kuhl, a registered nurse and the co-president of the National Nurses United.
Our first reaction is, our hearts go out to the nurses and their families and the communities that they live in, and we're very sorry this happened. Unfortunately, it probably didn't have to happen if everyone had been better prepared and if there had been decent protocols like we're calling for had been in place.
So these nurses they were working at the Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. They came in contact and when they were treating Thomas Duncan, who was the patient who came to Dallas from Liberia and brought Ebola with him. What circumstances were they treating Mr. Duncan? Did they have everything that they needed?
It's my understanding from what the nurses have told us. And one nurse actually went public today, a very brave nurse, talked about the care afterwards at that hospital. It's my understanding that the nurses didn't have any training, that there were no actual consistent, appropriate protocols in place, that there was many missteps, and it's National Nurses United position that all healthcare workers should be, all nurses should be prepared in advance so that this kind of thing does not happen again and that we should have the highest level of protection. I saw this morning on national news that when they were transporting one of the nurses to Emory, the second nurse who unfortunately contracted Ebola, to Emory, she was in entire protective garb, head to toe, and the people who were transporting her were in optimal hazmat-type suits. So if that's necessary to transport a patient outside of a hospital who has just been diagnosed, it's certainly necessary for nurses who are caring for patients who are very, very ill and in quite a bit of distress.
The feeling is that there's going to be more cases of Ebola coming to the United States or being spread in the United States. Nurses are on the front line of trying to contain this situation. How do they feel? What's the mood?
I actually just was in a meeting of many nurses from the hospital where I work, and nurses want to be prepared. We're willing to go to work every day and care for patients with infectious diseases. That's what we do. That's our calling. But we need the appropriate training. We need the highest level of personal protective equipment, not just for ourselves, but so we don't spread any infectious disease, Ebola included, to other patients and into our communities. Nurses want to do this work. That's why we're nurses. But we really need our employers to step up and provide the highest level of protective equipment necessary, which we see the CDC wearing in the news, and we need the training to don and doff it correctly to protect us and patients and our communities.
So the standards and protocols, even now, even after they've been toughened some by the CDC, are still anemic, according to some. Is that your feeling as well?
Yes, it is. Now, I know things are changing rapidly, but we wrote a letter. We sent a letter to President Barack Obama yesterday. National Nurses United sent a letter, and nurses are signing it all across the country today to chime in, and it has very specific requirements that we think are necessary. We need the highest level of personal protective equipment that meets the standards that are used by University of Nebraska Medical Center. And we need full hazmat suits that meet certain standards. We need proper staffing so that we can care for the patients and not transmit it to others or to ourselves, any kind of infectious disease. We need interactive training. We need buddy systems. We need all of those things in place. And we need it in advance of identifying a patient who has Ebola.
The two nurses that have contracted Ebola, Nina Pham and Amber Vizen, they seem like really outstanding individuals. The nurses that we have in the United States, they're just the best and the brightest and the most caring. These are not the people that we want to become cannon fodder in the fight against Ebola.
No, we do not. And those nurses are very, very brave. They were working in what they probably knew to be really unsafe circumstances, yet they continue to provide the best care they could to their patient. They're heroes in my mind, and it's unfortunate that we weren't able as a healthcare system, as a society, to demand the proper standards and training in advance before they were put in that situation.
So it's unfair to expect nurses to say, no, I'm not going to go in there because I don't have the right gear, but we're going to have. Do you expect them to say that?
We face a emergencies on the job daily. And we rush into rooms to save lives in certain situations, pulling on protective gear as fast as we can. We do that already. These nurses shouldn't be in, that position with Ebola. We should be prepared in advance. And I don't think a single nurse would refuse to care for a patient once she had proper training and the proper equipment. Patients shouldn't be placed in a situation where nurses don't have the training either for the patient. The patient needs the care.
The Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas, they had no idea that an Ebola victim was going to be showing up on their doorstep. So it would have been difficult for them to be trained to the point where they should have been. But this went on for 2 days before they got the proper equipment, right?
That's my understanding. We have been saying for months, that we needed proper training in advance of a patient approaching, of this happening in the United States. And it's not just the United States, mind you. There's healthcare workers, nurses in West Africa who have died by the hundreds. And that shouldn't be happening either, though we should have mounted a different international response there to prevent the spread of this disease. But yet we didn't. So if with proper training and proper screening, all of this could have been prevented.
Martha Kuhl is a registered nurse and the co-president of the National Nurses United. Ebola is a very real threat, but it can be safely dealt with. But there is concern about the paranoia about Ebola that some began to call Fearbola. Remember the Carnival cruise ship that the media converged on? It was turned away from Mexico and had to return to Texas because of Fearbola. Here's how CNN told the story.
A lab supervisor from the hospital where Ebola patient Thomas Eric Duncan died remained quarantined on a cruise ship. The woman never had contact with Duncan, but may have had contact with his fluid samples. In a statement, Carnival Cruise Line says, at no point in time has the individual exhibited any symptoms or signs of infection.
The Dallas lab worker never contracted Ebola. She only may have had possible contact with Duncan's lab work. Nevertheless, public school officials in Moore, Oklahoma, asked students and faculty who were on the same cruise ship not to come to school until they can be cleared for not being infected with Ebola. And using the excuse of an abundance of caution, Navarro College, a two-year college about 60 miles from Dallas, sent out rejection letters to some applicants from Nigeria because the country had a few Ebola cases. And then there's the Texas school district that closed some of its schools for deep cleanings due to Fearbola. Belton ISD is near Temple, Texas. Susan Kincannon is the superintendent of Belton ISD.
We had two students who were on flight 1143 on Monday coming from Cleveland to Dallas who attend our schools. One is an elementary student, one's a middle school student. Both are siblings. We learned that they had been on that flight about noon, just before 1 o'clock on Tuesday. And so we have closed three of our campuses, the two campuses where those students attend schools, and an early childhood school where students transit through the elementary school on a daily basis because we wouldn't have anyone there to receive those students. We have made some decisions regarding the cleaning of those schools. We have a team, a cleaning crew, coming in this morning from the Dallas area to clean our elementary school and our middle school, and that is in progress, and we anticipate that school will be held back as normal on Monday.
So would you describe this action as being a superabundance of caution?
Sure. We are being taking as big of a precaution as we can. Of course, the safety of our students is a priority for us. The option that we've chosen for cleaning and disinfecting the schools certainly exceeds recommendations from health officials. However, it's important to us that we feel confident that we've done everything possible to ensure the safety of our students.
And how was this decision reached? Because obviously, for those people who pay attention to what's actually being said by the CDC, that these school children were really not at risk.
Sure. We explored several options for disinfecting our schools. One option was to follow our normal procedures and use our in-house maintenance staff. Another option was to have some guidance from our local hospitals. Then we looked to some outside experts. And ultimately, we wanted to use the method that we thought would provide the best overall cleaning, and we didn't feel like we had the resources in our district to pull our staff from other campuses to make that happen ourselves.
Yeah, but the decision to close the campuses for these days, I mean, they were on the flight with the nurse, but it's very – I know that low risk is not no risk, but still it's very, very low risk that anyone has been infected.
Sure. We had some conflicting information on Tuesday evening. We had first been notified that the students were at extremely low risk. However, by 10 o'clock Tuesday evening, there was some reassessment of the passengers on the plane, and we were not clear of the risk at that time, so we determined that we needed to go ahead and close school for Thursday based on the information that we had, and then we went ahead and closed today so that we could have time to do that cleaning.
And so how much do you think this is going to cost the school district? There's the expense for the deep cleaning, the disinfecting, and then also the loss of revenue that would be coming from the state of Texas for the attendance.
Sure. We anticipate the cleaning cost to be approximately $32,000. And in terms of attendance, we have not yet quantified the amount. However, the state does provide for a waiver for circumstances of this nature, and so we'll be seeking a waiver for attendance from the Commissioner of Education.
So I'm sure you were dealing with a lot of parents who had a lot of anxiety.
Sure.
And so how did that work out?
Well, naturally, parents are concerned when they learn of the possibility of something of this nature, and we have been pushing information out to them as quickly as we could. We want them to be informed, and we want them to know that we're doing everything possible to ensure the safety of their children.
I spoke to Susan Kincannon, the superintendent of Belton ISD, about the closing of their schools for a deep cleaning earlier this year because of an Ebola scare. Ebola is a deadly infectious disease. It continues to spread in West Africa, and it's likely to reemerge back here in the United States. But now the novelty of the news story is gone, and we can hope that we can do a better job of dealing with the reality of the virus. Ebola needs two things to spread and become a major outbreak: poverty and ignorance. When Ebola returns, we as a nation have the resources to contain and eliminate it, but we will always have to be on guard for Fearbola. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. And you can write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters that you can listen to. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.